Welcome to Carittles. This week, working on an aeroplane, part one. The questions this cast answers are, do I have to work on business-related flights? What should I work on a business-related flight? And how should I prepare for working on a business-related flight? There's two reasons to change a job, because you want to and because you have to. Right now, there's a lot of people changing jobs because they have to. There's also two people changing jobs because they want to. It's one of those times of year when there's a lot of churn in the market and the economic situation is just adding to that. And changing jobs means interviewing that dreaded black box barrier between you and the job you want. But fortunately, the interview series exists to help remove the mystery of the black box. We tell you everything we know about the process of interviewing, what's expected and how to succeed. From analysing your own experience and how it fits, to following up after the interview, we give you step-by-step, action-by-action, the path from where you are to where you want to be. Don't change jobs without it. I just came back from London and I upgraded to business. And when I stood up, there was an amusing array of what different people were doing. There were some people who just took the opportunity to lie flat the bed and have a nap, despite the fact the place we'd just left from was 10 in the morning. But anyway, there were definitely some people who looked like they were working, and there was definitely some people that looked like they were watching movies and TV on the screens and doing nothing else. And probably some people playing with their Nintendo handheld things. I don't know what those things are called. But there's a real range of what you see, even in business class, of what people think they should be doing on an aeroplane. But if your company is paying for your flight, then you have an obligation to work just like you do in the office. And in this class, we're going to talk about more about why and how you can be effective when you're doing so.
Yeah, so our outline for today is, number one, you have an obligation to work. We're going to talk about that. Number two, plan what you'll work on. This is crucial. Can't wait to talk about that. Number three, don't assume you'll have ideal working conditions. Four, keep abreast of FAA and airline rules, especially if you don't travel very often. Number five is get your equipment ready. And number six is choose the most suitable type of work. So we start with, you have an obligation to work. And Wendy, I feel like this is, of all the parts of the cast, this will be the part that's the most polarizing.
Yes. Right?
People will say, well, I mean, do I really have an obligation to work? Like, technically this is like a travel day. That's what I've heard a lot of people say. Like, this is a travel day.
Yes. It's not a work day. It's a travel day.
Yeah. My work is traveling. That's what I'm doing, right? I'm getting from my home to, and I understand where people are coming from. It's an inconvenience, you know, to get an assignment or have to go away from your home or away from, you know, your location that you live or reside in to have to go do work. And so there's almost this, not quite indignance, but almost this like, yeah, I feel like
it's payback.
I should
right?
be able to relax. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
you're making me travel, so you can't also make me work.
Right. Exactly. But here's the thing. If your company paid for your flight and it's a work day, you're obligated to work. And that means work at the airport while you're waiting for the flight and during the flight. A 4-hour 9 a.m. flight on a Wednesday is not 4 free hours. It's 4 working hours during which you're being paid to be as productive as you normally are. And if that wasn't the expectation, then you'd be docked 4 hours of pay,
exactly.
Right? You wouldn't get paid for those 4 hours.
Yeah. And we don't want to believe that people have to be watched in order to be working, in order to be productive. And we believe that people working remotely can be as effective as those in the office, at least as far as their work goes, if not the relationships. But what we see on aeroplanes, oh, by the way, I'm going to say aeroplanes throughout this, because I can't say airplanes, but that's what I mean. My brain just doesn't do it. But what we see on aeroplanes is that there's a large proportion of people who believe that once they're on the plane, they're safe from any expectations or responsibilities. which might have once been true when there was no Wi-Fi and no phone service and no ability to plug your laptop in. And, you know, the last 10 years, unfortunately, has made it so there's no excuses. Even when we fly in first class or walk through first class, you know, where the fares are three times as much as they are in the rest of the airplane, there's professionals playing games or watching videos or sleeping. And they would not do that in the office between 9 and 1 on a Wednesday. So doing so on an airplane just because you can't be seen, it's childish. It's inexcusable.
Yeah. Well, and even if there's someone thinking, well, but, you know, something happened, maybe the kids were up in the middle of the night and I'm tired, I'm exhausted and I want to catch up on sleep. But I think the point we're making here is you wouldn't do that in the office. You wouldn't say, you know what, I need to catch up on some Z's. And so I'm going to close the door to my office and just, you know, put my head down for an hour. You wouldn't do that. So just because you're in a different setting, because you're on an airplane, doesn't mean that now all the rules of work and productivity go out the window. It was not that long ago. I think I actually slacked about it. Maybe a few months ago, I was on an airplane and I was sitting in business class. And there's professionals there. There's people of all walks of life there. And my seatmate sitting next to me was a gentleman, had to be 20 years my senior. He was easily 2 decades older than me. And I glance over because I see him kind of like jolting in his seat a little bit, like shoulders are kind of moving quickly. And so I look over and he's on an iPad or a tablet and he's playing like a Mortal Kombat, like fighting game. And I thought, one, that's kind of cool. Like, that's great. That's nice, right? Like, that's cool that, you know,
he's keeping up with the kids, right?
Maybe this is something he plays with his grandkids or something. But then I immediately thought, well, I hope he's not supposed to be working, right? Hopefully he's retired. He's, you know, he's got it. Because, and one of the things that we talk about this all the time with on career tools and manager tools is your representation of your company. And I immediately, without even thinking, and I'm not a terribly judgmental person, but I immediately just glanced to see if he was wearing any like company logos or anything. Because I was thinking, if he is working, who does this gentleman work for, right? Like, what kind of a company can you just play Mortal Kombat on the plane? Like, that's impressive. But yeah, it's an interesting thing in any, you know, any seat that you're in, whether it's business or coach. But yeah, it's interesting that people kind of take it for granted being on an airplane, being, you know, traveling and not taking advantage of, I mean, quite frankly, some of the best focus, uninterrupted time that you can get.
Yeah, I got on the plane to Dallas and I was like, good, I've got 8 hours. I'm going to sort everything out. And I did. It was fun. But yeah, I could have sat there and gone to sleep, I guess, but I wasn't going to. But in order to be effective, you have to plan what you're going to work on. You can't just get on the airplane and think about, you know, and then, you know, open your email inbox and think, oh, I'm going to work on this. You have to be planning ahead of time.
This is so critical. And I think when you're planning your work, you have to plan, and we're going to talk about all the different scenarios. You have to plan for not just this is what I'm going to do, right? But you have to plan for all the different scenarios. So we're going to talk about that.
Being on an airplane is not the ideal conditions for working. I was thinking that when I was on this plane to Dallas. I was thinking, this is a business class seat, but, you know, it isn't actually that much wider than any of the other seats. And it's a little bit longer because my feet don't reach the stool. But the desk isn't any bigger, and it was kind of the table. And it was kind of, it was one of those that folds out, and it was kind of rickety. So it was quite hard to write when we had turbulence. And so even though I thought, oh, I'm going to be in business, I'm going to get a lot done, that's not necessarily the case. And it's actually not even, it's not as much better as you might think it is.
Right.
So some things are easier and some things are more difficult when you're working in weird conditions. So we're going to talk about what those things are. But it's not just about space and power for your laptop. It's about where you're going and what time it is and what you're going to do when you get there. So, you know, those things are factors too, and we'll talk about some specifics in a minute. But make sure before you leave, you've made some notes about what you're going to work on a piece of paper, just in case you don't have a battery or they make you put your laptop up and then you can't get up to get it because there's turbulence or whatever. Relying on electronic systems on an aeroplane, even when they say, oh yes, there's power at every seat. Yours is the one seat where the power isn't working. And they're not going to stop the aeroplane because one person's power isn't working. So
no,
it's kind of sucks to be you.
Right, exactly.
So never think you're going to absolutely have electronics because you might not.
Yeah, I think all of this is an exercise in contingency planning, mm-hmm. right? You've got to have contingencies for different situations and different circumstances. And again, I go back to, if you don't travel a lot, you don't know what mm-hmm. some of those contingencies need to be. And hopefully that's what we can help with this cast. So a very, you know, small example is if you're going to a location, if you're going somewhere, we're going to talk about a few of the different places you could be going and what you could use that time to prepare for. So for example, you're leaving from home and you're going to a conference. Well, you could study the agenda for the conference, circle which talks you want to go to, right? Plan out your days. Look at your contact list and see who might be there and with whom you would want to have a meal, you know, breakfast or even just coffee. Maybe if you don't have a dinner planned, you can, you know, schedule a dinner or at least reach out and see what someone else's plans for dinner are. You can look at the list of presenters and decide who you're going to try to meet in person, you know, attend a meet and greet or stay after, knowing that that's going to infringe on some other time that you may spend otherwise. You can study preparation materials or materials that provide background knowledge about that particular subject. So that way, when you have that interaction, you can speak more intelligently about the topic or ask more insightful questions. You can read news headlines and, you know, sports results in order to find topics for small talk if you are in a situation where that's going to be really important, which at any conference, there's yes. going to be a need for some level of small talk, whether it's before a session is starting, before a talk is going, and you sit down to a table and you're getting to know people at the table. You want to have some fodder for general pleasantries in conversation. And I would say lastly, you want to familiarize yourself with the layout of the event so that you have more time to meet people and less time getting lost wandering around.
Some of those conference hotels are so big and
yeah,
it's a big conferences are just so big and it all looks the same. Like every corridor looks exactly the same. So it's easy to get lost and they'll move talks from this room to that room. And if you haven't looked at the map and kind of oriented yourself, you can't find the other room and then you're late. And so it's amazing how much knowing the layout would help with the efficiency of the event for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Wendy, I don't know if everyone listening knows this, but I live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and in the casinos, which is where a lot of the conference spaces are in town, the carpet is deliberately designed to be confusing so that you can't identify certain places and make your way out so you can stay in and spend more money and gamble. And I feel like the conference spaces just use the same carpeting because it's so confusing sometimes.
We'll get a job lot.
Yeah, it's, you know, and every room has a slightly different, you know, it's ballroom 1A and ballroom 1B, and yet they're miles apart.
Just to confuse it's you. Just,
yeah, so very important to just familiarize yourself with the layout so you spend time, you know, or less time getting lost.
So here's another example. If you were going to a head office, so you work in, you either work remotely or you work in a satellite office, you work somewhere where, you know, where the office isn't so important, then you're going to head office where all of the people are. So things you could do on the aeroplane are review your calendar to make sure that you're making the most of the time that you'll be there. Like even if you have a couple of hours free, thinking about who you could go see, whose desk you could walk past. Sometimes there's facilities at head office that there aren't in satellite offices. you might want to look at your contact list and decide who's there that you would want to have breakfast or lunch or dinner or a coffee with, or just walk past their desk. So for the first part is finding the time. And the second is, now I've got the time, who am I going to fill? Which relationships do I want to work on to fill that time?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever system you use for capturing data about people. So things like people's spouses' names and their children's names and what grade they're in or what they're interested in, or the fact that somebody just went for a vacation. All of those things that show that you care about them and you're trying to have a relationship, rather than, you know, walking up to someone who you want to have a relationship with and going, oh, no idea what your wife's name is.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that makes professionals professional. They do that ahead of time. And it makes people impressed with, oh, yeah, you actually remember who I am and who my family are. And now I feel more important because of it. And yeah, people who make you feel important, those are the people you like.
Yeah. Wendy, I just had a thought, and I wanted to real quick go back to the idea of when you're in the home office or regional office, right, or you're visiting headquarters or whatever of your organization, and you're deciding, you mentioned deciding who you want to, you know, maybe walk by their desk, see if they're there, say hi, right, that type of stuff. I highly encourage, if you're going to a central office for your organization, spend as much time as you can, and this is not the right way to phrase this, but wandering around.
Yes.
I mean, go walk around. If you know that there's one person in a department that you vaguely have interacted with once or twice, go walk, not just to their desk, but walk around their department. See who else they sit next to. It's a small thing, but it is invaluable. When you're in a satellite location or a remote location, it's one of those things where you feel isolated and you don't have all the wherewithal that the people who sit in the, you know, headquarters or central location do. And just the idea that maybe you only interact with that one person who in that department, right? That's mm-hmm. That's the only person you really interact with. But something changes organizationally, or you can't get a hold of them and you need someone else. Just knowing that Jim sits next to Bill, mm-hmm. and Bill's the guy that I go to all the time. But if I can't get a hold of Bill, and I know Jim sits right next to him, he may not do the same job, but I can ping Jim and say, hey, Jim, sorry about this weird thing. I have an urgent need for Bill, can't get a hold of him. And it never fails that something weird is like, and Jim goes, oh, yeah, Bill's phone went down today. The IT's been up here several times trying to fix it. Yeah, here, let me give you to him.
Yeah.
So easy, right? But you wouldn't know that Jim sits next to Bill if you hadn't been there and just kind of walked around.
Yeah, that's right? Genius.
And taken notes.
Absolutely. And I've done that so many times.
Yeah.
You know, called the person who I know sits next to someone, or, you know, when our presenters are traveling and I know there's two of them in the room and one of them is presenting, then texting the other one and saying, hey, can you tell this one at a break mm-hmm. to look at their phone?
Oh, yeah.
Works really well. But you can't do that unless you know who those people are.
Right, right. Knowing who sits next to the fax machine.
Yes.
Right? People don't go pick up their faxes as often as, I mean, who uses a fax machine? But if you use a fax machine, if that's where, you know, or the printer or whatever, mm-hmm. knowing who sits near there or knowing the layout of the office is always another helpful way to, you know, build and foster relationships and be more productive, get more stuff done.
Love that. That was a great aside. I'm glad we did that.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's good. It's not just for managers. Do you spend too much time getting involved in situations where a lack of communications mindfulness resulted in poor customer outcomes, internal irritations, or just anger just because of the way the message was delivered? Perhaps your group would benefit from our effective communicator client on-site training. We teach you how to observe others' behaviors, and with a few quick calculations, you can determine with a high probability the MT DISC score of someone with whom you want to develop a relationship. And most importantly, we teach and practice how to modify your natural communication style to have a positive exchange. This skill is so important and needed for managers, but yet also for project team managers, team members, key influencers, customer service facing individuals, in fact, everybody in an organization can use this skill. If we come to your organization and you have up to 30 individuals, the price is roughly half that of sending a large group to our public conferences. Reach out to Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com and she'll send you more details or walk you through the details of a client engagement. We also offer this training slightly differently, but just as useful in a virtual format. Next, prepare for the meetings that you're going to. This seems to be a remarkably uncommon thing, actually preparing for meetings, but you're going to some meetings, you're going to head office, presumably the people in there are important because your company is paying for you to go, therefore some preparation might be helpful. Mm-hmm. Reread any emails that you have from people that you're meeting to try and work out their DISC profile or their likes, dislikes, the way they communicate, so that you can be more effective when you meet them. So if you go through a bunch of emails and all of the emails from one person only have three or four words in them, you know you have to get to the point when you start talking because that's how they're sending you your emails. So that's what they want. You don't even have to be that deep into DISC to understand, to be able to look at a bunch of emails and pick out the communication commonality and be able to then replicate that in a conversation.
Yeah.
Check if there's anybody in the same town who doesn't work for your company that you want to meet with. So let's say you're going to Chicago and you're going to the head office in Chicago, but there's somebody that you went to university with or somebody who worked for your company and has now moved that you could have dinner with or you could have breakfast with before you went to head office. Not all of your relationships are in your company, but they might be in the same city.
Mm-hmm.
And then check if there's any cool experiences or stores that you want to go to, because you are at least allowed a little bit of fun. Like, we're not going to make this the worst trip in the world and make you be productive 24 hours a day. I was going somewhere where there was a store that I wanted to go to and it's, 5 miles down the road and I can catch an Uber after dinner, then you can do that. Or maybe there's something I've always wanted to see the Bean in Chicago. I've seen it, but it's not that far. You can go and see it and take a picture and leave again, I guess. But often we're going to big cities where there is things to do that maybe don't happen in our city, or there's some unusual store that you can't normally go to. Like, you're allowed to have a little bit of fun.
I love this because we're not curmudgeons, right? We're not this, all work and no play. There are some opportunities to have, a little bit of a fun or a respite. Yeah. Okay. So there are similarities in these two lists. They're about making the most of the time that you have and using it to interact or meet with people. A trip is an opportunity to meet with colleagues or friends or make acquaintances and do all of that in person, which in the environment that we're in is increasingly rare. Mm-hmm. And it's so important for building those relationships that we constantly talk about and espouse. The worst thing that you could do is to waste a trip to, a home office or to a conference and end up regretting not having, met that person or found time to have coffee with that person or shaken that person's hand and, said thank you and exchanged information to keep in touch. And, we created different kind of example task lists for these events. Many of these tasks, though, apply to several different trips that any professional might take.
Yeah, I mean, equally, looking at the layout of a conference and looking at the layout of head office, the two things have similar benefits, if you don't often go to head office and they move departments all the time, which people do, mm-hmm. which people tend to do, it's good to know, just look up the latest map of where you are. I used to work for IBM, which I think I've said before, and there was one location I used to go to that was filled with the most techie of the IT techies, and it was a particularly cute, confusing building. And so long before there were apps or mobile phones, like long before, they had this thing that you could log on to the intranet and you could say which room you were in and which room you wanted to go to or which person you wanted to see, and it would give you a map. It was so cool.
Oh, that is cool.
It was really cool because they were that techie, they could do it, and they knew the building was confusing, and so they did it. And it was so cool. It was like getting this little individualized map. And, you know, at the time, maps were in books. They weren't mm-hmm. on phones, or, you know, you didn't get a Google map with an individualized route for you like we do now.
Yeah.
And it was the coolest thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's apropos because of what we're talking about, but they do that. The airlines have maps of different airports, and rather than just you figuring out where you're going, you can say, this is where I want to go. I want to go to this restaurant, or I want to go to this lounge or whatever, and it'll just say, this is where you go and how long it'll take you to get there, which is very helpful for connecting
flights. Yes, that's the bit I really like. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the homebound trip, you've got a chance to clear up all of the administration from that trip, and it is so much better to have all of that stuff tied up on the plane rather than let it travel home with you. You are guaranteed to lose a receipt if you have it in your bag and then you get on a plane and then you're at the airport and then you get in your car and then you get home. Where's that receipt? Nowhere to be found. Maybe it's just my bag that's a black hole, but I don't think so. And it's a much better experience for you and your family if you are able to be home when you get home. You know, if you're not thinking, oh, I've still got all that stuff, I've still got to do my expenses, I've still got to send that thing that I promised, and you come home and, you know, your family has missed you and they want to talk to you about their day, and you're like, yeah, yes, but I've only got half a brain on this because I'm thinking about my expenses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the third benefit is if you've promised to send something to someone, or, you know, to reach out to someone on someone's behalf, and you do that on the plane on the way home, they're going to be really impressed by your efficiency, because most people won't do that. Most people will wait till they get back in the office or maybe the week after. And, you know, that's normal. If you want to impress, do it on the way home, and people will notice the difference between you and everyone else.
I know we talk about DISC a lot, but if you're a task-focused individual and all of these interactions with people are draining for you, I completely understand that. That makes a lot of sense. I don't look at this as, rather than, you know, recharging and you know, resting on the plane, I don't look at this as steering away from that. I think of this as, think about what you're doing, those items, as tasks. Which should kind of recharge you, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, things I can just check off. Love it, right?
Nice.
Sent that email. Done. Wrote that thank you card. Done. Oh, so good to just get those things done. So I think just flipping that switch in your brain and thinking like, okay, yes, it was exhausting. Now let me get where I'm centered, which is tasks and getting stuff done.
That's a great point. Okay, so here's some things, other things to do on the way home. So let's say you're going home from the conference we talked about. So look at the agenda again and make notes about the talks that you went to. You might not be able to do that in the moment, or you might have put them into some notebook, but having a list of these are the ones I went to and these are where my notes are, or these are the high points that I want to think about later on, just while it's all fresh in your mind, that's a great thing to do on the plane. If you made rough notes, then you can copy them into a neater or searchable format, or add them to whatever knowledge system you have. A lot of the time, you know, we scribble things when we're taking notes in meetings or at presentations, and we need to go back and consolidate that and pick out the things that are important. Find the tasks and put them in the task system. Find the notes and put them in your notes system, whatever systems you have. But doing that, again, while things are fresh, is so much easier. If you're going to write thank you notes, if there's a reason to write a thank you note, even if you have to stretch it a bit, write a thank you note. Thank you for going to lunch with me. Thank you for your help with finding the room I was looking for. Thank you for the idea that you gave me when we were talking. Thank you for organizing this event. Thank you for speaking at this event. Thank you for making me feel like one of the team. There's a million reasons you can say thank you for things. And my theory is that thank you cards get bigger in the post. So you write a little thank you card, and when it arrives, the impact it has is way bigger than that little card. And you can write thank you notes without seeming sycophantic or, you know, like you're just buttering people up. Because if you have a genuine reason and you can think of a genuine reason, there is no sycophancy. It comes across that there was a genuine reason and you feel thankful to someone. If you think about it, there's a lot of reasons to be thankful to people.
And that's the thing I think a lot of people miss about thank you notes is it definitely makes the person feel great. It's so impactful. Who doesn't like getting a thank you note, right? I mean, it doesn't even matter what it's for. I just love it, right? It's a handwritten thing. It's personal. And it's a much deeper concept we don't have time to get into. But there's a concept about kind of resetting your mindset around being grateful and being appreciative, right? And it's not quite cathartic. It's a thing that is healthy for you to find a reason to say thanks to someone and notice those things because it makes you more cognizant of them in the moment and afterwards. So, okay, I'll get off that soapbox. That's a little deep for working on an airplane.
If you don't know where to send them, if you've been to head office, the head office address will work. If you've been at a conference, then when you're talking to people, say, I would like to keep in touch. Please, will you give me your address? Or I'd like to send you something in the mail. Please, will you give me your address or an address I can send something to? Some people will give you a PO box and that's fine.
Yeah.
If it's a speaker, then almost certainly they have a website with an address on it. Because if somebody is big enough to be speaking at events, they have websites. And if you really can't find an address, sending them an email and saying, hey, I wanted to put something in the mail to you. Please, will you let me know a good address to send it to? 99% of people will send you an address. So, and it doesn't make the thanks any less. It doesn't make their appreciation any less when you had to ask.
No. And most people who have an address or most people who have a PO box or something, yes, it could take longer to get to them. That's even more of a reason to get
to it quicker, early,
right? To do it early, because then they can be even more impressed. I know this had to go and be routed a few different times, and it still got to me in 3 days. Wow, it's impressive.
Okay, so if you collected materials, you were at presentations and there were giveaways, or you were at a meeting and there was an agenda and then there was some documentation, go through it and sort out what you're keeping and what's trash, what needs putting again into some kind of system, what needs filing, and what stuff you could just leave on the aeroplane and never see it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one of this list, but not the last thing you could do, is send any emails that you agreed to while you were at the conference. So if you said to someone, oh, I'll send you something later, or oh, I've seen a PDF about that, or some research about that, I'll send you an email. Do it on the plane, because then it's done and you get all of these benefits.
Yeah. And so, you know, conversely, if we're talking about that trip to the head office or headquarters or a central office, if you're going home on your return trip, here are some other examples of things that you could do. So you could update your system for keeping track of people and the details that you keep about them, such as spouses or children's names. You could, again, write thank you cards for dinners or events, or even something as simple as thank you for showing me around the office while I was in town. Put your receipts in order and get them ready, or even entering them into the company expense report or company expense software on the plane could be really helpful. Making notes about meetings you attended, maybe again, to Wendy's point, you made some scribble notes and you need to clean those up and clarify some things. Maybe you need to add follow-up actions or meetings into your calendar or task management system. Always helpful to be able to get those done on the plane. And then, kind of to our earlier point, make notes about fun things that either you did or places to go next time, right? Maybe you checked out, you had a few extra minutes, you went to a place and you're like, you know what? I don't know that I would do that again. Mm-hmm. Make a note about that so that you know, you know, if someone else is going to home office in a month and they go, you know, I'm planning on going to see this thing. And you could say, oh, you know what? I did that. It wasn't for me, but, you know, oh, okay. I didn't realize. Right. And now you've got a little bit of, or if something was great and they have nothing to, you know, fill their trip with. You could say, hey, you should really check out this thing because this is really cool. And here's how you do it. And this is where you go. You'll save 20% if you go get the ticket through here rather than there. It's just so helpful.
And a lot of the time when you're somewhere in a strange city, people will tell you. So the people at head office will say, oh, did you go to wherever? It's right next to your hotel. Or have you had dinner at this place? And you're like, every night I have while I'm here is full up. I can't change a dinner. But for next time, now you've got somewhere to go to dinner. You know, so we all like to make suggestions of our favorite things to other people. So you'll probably have a list of those and you want to make sure that you've got them somewhere so that next time you come, you can plan for it. So we've given you a bunch of things that you could be doing on airplanes, both on the outbound and the return. We'll come back next week with some more nitty-gritty details about working on planes. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.